Hello and welcome to the NRF1 podcast on Acast, on iTunes, and of course now on Future Radio in Norwich. I hope this finds you well. We are in the canteen at Archant Towers in Norwich, hence the echo, but also doesn't that just give the best sense of perspective for what was an amazing Spanish Grand Prix? So much to talk about, so many opinions that I'm sure we're going to collect from the panel today. My name is Michael Bailey. I am with Richard Baxter and Kyle Cumbers to talk about everything that took place around Barcelona. Kyle Cumbers, how are you, first of all?
I'm very well. And yourself?
Yeah, tired. I'm glad the football is pretty much done, even though the work hasn't stopped talking about it. And I have to say, I was at the last game of the Premier League season while this race was going on. So it was all filtering through. I was picking it up as and when, and bits and bobs that went and came along, and had my own opinions. We'll get stuck into them in a bit. But Rich, what a race. Where does it stand for you?
It's probably the best race, I think, at Barcelona we've ever had. Well, in my memory anyway. I know there was talk of 96 when Michael Schumacher winning for Ferrari has been quite a good race, but to be honest, I don't really remember that. I was 6 years old. But yeah, I mean, that was probably the best race we've had at Spain in a long time. Lots of drama, lots of action. It's what Formula One's about.
Just incredible. And we've so far managed to not actually say what happened. I'm sure you out there know exactly what happened. We've clearly got two massive talking points. And I'm going to let you go. What do you want to talk about first?
Shall we talk about Mercedes? Has it happened on the first lap?
Maybe. Let's talk about Mercedes, because, of course, it was a Mercedes front row going into the race. Lewis Hamilton was on pole after a superb qualifying session. But Nico Rosberg got a better start around the outside of Lewis. He's leading into turn four. He then gets his D-rating setting muddled up, starts flashing his red light at the back, slowing down. Lewis goes for a gap that he thinks is there. Nico moves across. Lewis ends up spinning, taking out Nico Rosberg. And both of them fail to complete the first lap, finish the race, pick up any points, and end up where they were maybe a year or two back, at war-ish. They've kind of calmed down a bit since, but that was it. What did we make of it? The steward said racing incident. Did we agree?
I think in hindsight, saying racing incident is the fair decision. The thing is, today we're spoiled with slow motion replays and things like that. It's quite a funny one to digest, really, because when you watch it in slow motion, you can say, well, you know, from what both drivers have said, you hear their comments and you think the gap that Hamilton went for probably shouldn't have gone for. He should have tried to brake and go the other side, or, you know, something like that, because Rosberg had started to come across. But when you watch it at race speed, you don't realise the difference in speed and how fast he closes up. And he talks about there was a gap on the right, he went for it. And when you see it at race speed, you think, yeah, there's the gap. He's gone for it. And, of course, as he went for it, Rosberg kind of came across the defender's position. And we know what happened there. I think the driver's comments were a bit kind of... interviews I had were interesting anyway. I mean, Hamilton seemed more... yeah, it is what it is. And Rosberg seemed quite upset by it, which made me kind of think of the team kind of said something to Rosberg, because he did kind of move across. He left no room, which I think was the big thing, which kind of forced Hamilton onto the grass. And of course, he lost control from then on.
It could have been, I suppose, also that Nico felt more aggrieved. He felt that he was leading, he was going to win the race, and he got taken out.
True, but he's already... what was it, 43 points in the lead or something in the championship? So, I mean, it was kind of... didn't make too much difference there. But it was interesting. I kind of... Rosberg said he didn't think Hamilton would go for the gap. But to be honest, I don't accept that. He's been racing Hamilton pretty much all his life. He knows that gap is going to go for. To be honest, it was coming. We knew from probably the start of the season it was coming, if not probably last season, that they were going to have another collision at some point. And I've said for a while to various people, I always consider Ferrari the best team because they will drive both cars, different strategies, but work together as a team to get the result. Whereas Mercedes, it seems, of course, the drivers want to go for the victory themselves, whereas the team want what's best, and they kind of, I think they're struggling to kind of rein their drivers in a bit.
It's funny that obviously last week we were talking about conspiracy theories and now all of a sudden this has happened, which I love. I prefer this. I like it both. I love it all. It's brilliant. When the incident happened, you just cut it, the cameras cut to the crowd, and you had people with their hands over their mouth of, oh my God, what's just happened? I mean, Kyle, what did you make of it?
I completely agreed with the stewards. I was 50-50. Also, it's brilliant. F1 is brilliant like this, and all the stuff afterwards of talking and opinions is brilliant. But, and I don't know if anybody's seen it, but the Anthony Davidson analysis of it, it's well worth watching, five minutes of it, and it's very good.
Can you sort of summarise it a little bit?
This is more, slightly more Rosberg's fault, because of the, he knew he was in the wrong engine mode, and a huge difference in speed. But if you do watch it, they both turn right at exactly the same time. So as Lewis says afterwards, he says, the bigger gap was to the right, the inside, so that's why I went, so you can understand why he did that. And then you can understand why Rosberg went to block it. And Hamilton knew that was his only one chance to win that Grand Prix, because we all know how hard it is to overtake in Spain. He had to make the move, it's 50-50, and unfortunately he chose the wrong one. And I got a little bit annoyed with people saying afterwards, well, it's his first lap, it's your teammate, you should stay behind. I was like, they don't pay Lewis Hamilton £30 million a year to go, oh, I won't go for that move because it's my teammate, I'll stay behind and do it later. He had to take it at that time. Unfortunately, it went wrong, and that's just sometimes that happens.
And when you've got momentum like that, as you're closing up, you really think, this is my chance, so you've got to try and take it. And I mean, if you look at the, I think when Anthony Davidson, I saw the little bit he did, and you kind of see on board with Rosberg, and of course he was looking down at the steering wheel making changes. So you kind of think, well, for that split second, he would have taken his eye off his mirrors or anything, so we wouldn't exactly know where the other car is either. So it's, yeah.
In real time, it's amazing how quickly it happens. Niki Lauda said immediately after the race he blamed Lewis, didn't he? Yeah. He came out quite stringently about that. I mean, is that fair? Right, should he have been doing that? Niki should know what he's talking about.
He should, but sometimes he doesn't.
You did say it. Good for you, Rich. The thing that gets me is that, Lewis went for the gap. Niko moved across. He moved across quite sharply on a line that was not the racing line. In that situation, no other car behind them on the straight goes as far over as Niko did at that point. Now, I guess you're allowed one movement, but if he had done his one movement, he would have basically had to sort of literally follow around the tightest line of the corner to get around it. And to me, that was what sent Lewis, let's not forget, onto the grass. It was only then when Lewis lost control on the grass that he spun into Niko. He did everything he could, really, to avoid the contact. He was then out of control when he made the contact.
If you think about it, he could have done a Rosberg from Spa a couple of years ago, left his front wing in there, got a little bit of damage to his front wing, but given Rosberg a puncture, which was sending him to the back of the field, possibly a lap down. So, I mean, he could have been a bit of an ass about it, to be honest, but he kind of went for the safer option. Well, I say safer, kind of the avoiding action anyway, to go to the grass.
Just backing out as well. I mean, I don't think that's realistic, especially at the real-time speeds that you see it. I mean, obviously, this had all filtered through to me all afternoon, and I only got to watch all this on Wednesday night. Is that right? Yeah, we're Thursday. Wednesday night. And I couldn't believe how, having heard about it, it was probably mostly Lewis's fault, how I didn't really think it was, because I just thought the move from Niko was too much. And what have you got there, Rich? You've got something that's underlined.
Yeah, I found at the weekend from the Formula One website with all the rules on, and it's the rules for overtaking and defending the line. And the bit which is underlined is the highlight, which is drivers must ensure there's at least one car's width between their own car and the edge of the track, which is kind of the big thing. You think, well, was that space there? Not really, because Hamilton ended up on the grass. I also did get a picture of, as Mercedes shared the stewards' analysis of it on the letter, and I kind of got a picture of that, and judging by reading that, they said because Hamilton's car wasn't completely up the inside when he left the track, that's what it was. It was only part of his car. But, you know, contact's contact at the end of the day, and if you have to go off because there's no space, it's, you know, whether it's an inch or a mile, it doesn't particularly matter.
And I still thought it was a reaction, clearly, to Lewis being there.
It's a good point you make, though, that Rosberg goes literally to the edge of the track. Well, you don't need to go to the edge of the track to block somebody.
I expected them to be at the corner and Niko come across them, which I think happened with every other incident there's ever been, I suppose, but where the door gets closed on you. Yeah. But they were still miles away from the track. I mean, if you were karting, you wouldn't go right over to the left side, to the right side of the track to get around a right-hander.
No, it was especially when he knows he's a lot slower than the car behind. It's kind of dangerous to go all the way that way across the track. And also, if Lewis had gone to the left, it made him look a bit stupid because his line would have been so tight. So
he probably would have overtaken him anyway at that point.
Yeah.
But there we go. And as I said, with the Lewis spinning and then sort of colliding with Nico.
Yeah, I was going to say as well, just to add to that, if you remember the Bahrain Grand Prix in 2012, there was an incident with Rosberg and he pushed Hamilton off there and Hamilton kept his foot in it because it was kind of a sandy tarmac he was on, so he still had control and he got past. But he also did the same to Alonso and he had to back out of it, and Rosberg got away with it then as well. So I wonder if this is kind of a bit of a habit he's got.
And I suppose we're in a situation where Nico Rosberg has won the first four races of the season, perfect 100 points, and he had got round the outside of Lewis Hamilton at the start, which is something we've, I don't think, ever seen, have we? I mean, was that a game changer? Does that have an effect on things there?
I think imagine Lewis must have been pretty angry at himself for letting him, because he got a decent start. He was away just due to the
from pole again for the first time in a while.
Yeah, got a decent start just due to the slipstream, but he sort of, it looked like he just, I think he said afterwards, oh, because I was on the inside, it wasn't much grip, but it looked like he sort of just gave it to him, really. And I think he probably was a little bit angry after that, but still he had every right to make the move. So.
That's such a long down to such a long run down to turn one in Spain that it's easy for a car to get slipstream and just have the overspeed, like Carl said, and you know, you're kind of a sitting duck then.
Well, what happens now then? Because as you said, they've kind of let it go. I imagine it'll come up back up again if something kicks off later on in the season. I mean, who deals with this best? What does it mean? And effectively, who is your favourite for the title at the moment? Because everyone keeps saying it's Lewis. It's going to be Lewis. Don't worry about Nico.
I'm still going to say Lewis is favourite. I think Mercedes done really well, and they took them in to their trucks or whatever, and it was a good while before they actually came out, and then they went to the stewards and they came afterwards, so they didn't go straight to the media, and because they would both been in the pen at the same time, you imagine that might have been quite amusing to watch. They were both quite mature about it, and I think if they, and Toto Wolff did it, dealt with it in the right way, so sometimes this stuff happens, we let them race, and which, you know, it's going to happen. I'm surprised.
I'd rather they let them race, definitely.
Yeah. And, you know, it was a bit of a surprise it hasn't happened before, happened since Spa. So I think if they sort of downplay it, it could be okay. But then if we have another incident soon, then it could blow up, which is good for us.
you kind of say as well, you know, who would be best to sort this out? And you think, well, there's one man, Ross Brawn, who is at the team who went. And, of course, now this rivalry has kind of kicked off. When he was there with, I think it was the Korean Grand Prix in 2013, I think it was, and Rosberg said, oh, I'm so much faster, can I go past? And it was nope, straight away on the radio, nope, negative, you're not going past.
I think it was that Malaysia, wasn't it, when I think that was the same one that the Red Bulls kicked off as well, because they were all kicking off, weren't they? But as you said, Ross Brawn certainly would maybe make a difference, but he's retired now officially.
I know, it's not fair.
Rosberg needs to be careful because he's the one out of contract at the end of the season. So if he does kick off, you know,
read the rumours?
Oh, the Ferrari.
Yeah. Rumours about Rosberg to Ferrari. And Toto Wolff said, well, if Rosberg did want to leave, then we'd look at getting Alonso in.
Well, careful what you wish for, Nico. Jeez. Okay, well, you're listening to the NRF1 podcast on Acast and on Future Radio, as well as on iTunes. It's time for the NRF1 Pit Stops, and I can assure you there is only one place to start. Which is, of course, at Williams. No, not really. Red Bull. I mean, it's remarkable that we're this far through the podcast and history was made and we haven't even spoken about it. But that was your fault, Carl, because you chose it. But Max Verstappen, the guy who we spoke so long about being drafted in for Daniel Kvyat in that dramatic swap that, as I said at the time, for me was far more about Max than it was about Daniel. Goodness me, Max Verstappen goes and wins the race. He was the first Dutchman ever to lead a Grand Prix on lap 12. And then he went and won the thing. As soon as I was in a car on the way to Merseyside or whatever, as soon as I heard that the two Mercedes had gone out and it was Ricciardo being led by leading and Verstappen was second, I thought, you know what? Max is going to win this. You could just tell. And then when I found out, absolutely nuts. I mean, what is there to say? The guy is the youngest ever Formula One race winner.
are we that surprised after seeing what he's had the last couple of seasons? It's, we know he's a top driver and he deserved to win the race, really. And I was, if anyone else could have won it other than a British driver, I'll probably say Verstappen. Because, you know, it's just nice to see a young lad of 18 who's only passed a driving test a few months ago suddenly winning Formula 1 races.
But, I bet he didn't put any minors on his driving test because the guy didn't make a single mistake and he was under a lot of pressure at the end from Kimi Raikkonen too.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think it's 30-odd laps he did on the tyres, which we were told beforehand you couldn't do. He had Kimi Raikkonen behind him within 2 seconds for most of that period, and there wasn't a single mistake. He knew when Kimi was going to attack. He just managed it perfectly. And for a, we all know he had the speed, but then he's gone another step by showing his maturity and his management of the race. And that's the, you know, it's the stressful position to be in, leading a race. I mean, what he must have been going through, or any other normal 18-year-old would have been going through for the last 30 laps would have been unbelievable, but he just dealt with it perfectly.
In a different car, it is a different car, with a different steering wheel, which is the crucial thing, because you're learning a different set of controls. And he was like, well, I'll just, you know, see how it goes before the race. He was just no pressure on himself. I mean, it certainly did not fall in his lap, but he certainly got a little bit lucky with the fact that Red Bull appeared to muck up Daniel Ricciardo and tyre strategy, and of course Ferrari did the same with Sebastian Vettel as well, who seemed to be off it all weekend, really.
Yeah, it was weird how, because Ricciardo and of course Vettel went on to 3-stop, and yet Ricciardo was the one who suffered a tyre failure. Yeah. And it is like, what? So you had fresher tyres and your tyres are gone, what's happened there? But you know, it was a brilliant drive still. You know, he had to put up a lot of pressure. Raikkonen's no slouch, we know, because on his day as a quick driver, and in practice anyway, Ferrari looks pretty quick, but you know, Verstappen kind of shone through and he did what he did. It was good.
There was some great commentary from Ben Edwards on Channel 4, the celebrations as well, the Red Bull scenes. I haven't seen anything like that for a long time. It just struck me like that. You had marshals bowing to Max, one of my highlights as he drove round, and he became the 10th different winner at Barcelona. What does this do for Max and going for the rest of the season, but I suppose Daniel Ricciardo as well? Because let's just put that in context, he had a great qualifying and was quite unfortunate, as you said, puncture at the end as well.
Max only brought the best out of Ricciardo in qualifying, because it looked like he'd gained third position, and Ricciardo came out, this lap was unbelievable, and you saw or heard from his reaction afterwards how pleased he was with that. So I think he's just going to push Ricciardo on. I mean, Red Bull should be quick at various tracks around this year, at Singapore, Monaco. He can win more races, and if they got an engine upgrade, and maybe next year, could he be competing for a championship at 19 years old?
Well, this is it. I mean, Sebastian Vettel won his first race at the age of, anyone know?
21, was it?
21.
We're going to go 21. So, I mean, and then presumably it was probably another 2 or 3 years, wasn't it, until he won his first championship, because he won his first race for Toro Rosso, didn't he? So Max could be breaking all sorts of records, and given, you know, they won't allow anyone to race under 18 anymore, it might be records that don't get broken again. Just craziness.
One thing I did read was someone posted online, just like to remind everybody, a few years ago a certain Pastor Maldonado won the Spanish Grand Prix. Just thought, don't know if they're quite the same, but
but this is a fair point, isn't it? Because that did strike me. I was like, well, you know, people have won Grand Prix before, but this is different, isn't it? We're seeing something so genuinely special in Max. This is different to someone having their day, surely, isn't it? I guess time will tell.
Yeah, the Maldonado one was just, I think it's one off with a Williams got the tyres in a right position and that was fine, but he's getting quicker and quicker, and he keeps, every time you think, well, he can't do it, he just shows us wrong. We all thought he's too young when he came in, and then we thought, well, maybe it's a bit too early, maybe go to Red Bull, and he just, anything that comes at him, chucks at him, he just accepts and gets quicker and quicker. So
just beats it. Sorry, you were just showing me, weren't you, Rich?
Yeah, I was just, thank you to BBC Sport app, Formula One, for doing something decent.
I don't need to bother anymore, sadly.
But yeah, to confirm, Max Verstappen was 18 years, 7 months, 5 days. Vettel was the second youngest race winner at 21 years, 2 months and 11 days. And then third is Alonso, 22 years, 26 days.
Goodness me, what a trio that is. Absolutely. Well, I think it's going to be fascinating now what happens at Red Bull between those two first of the season, which is just another really exciting facet to this season. And Max winning has got everyone talking about Formula One. It seems to have breathed new life into the series to those who maybe weren't following it before. I think that's the crucial thing. We all knew about Max, but the people who've just suddenly gone, oh, look, who's this guy? I think they'll be paying closer attention over the coming weeks, certainly. Let's rattle through a few others, shall we? And we sort of touched a bit on Ferrari, and the pace kind of disappeared for Vettel, but, you know, Kimi is now up to second in the Drivers' Championship, which seems like a phenomenal effort. When Kimi made his Formula One debut, Max Verstappen was 3 years old, which I love that. And he did do a good job to put Max under pressure. I mean, yeah, it was sort of a renaissance from Kimi. Second in the Drivers' Championship. I mean, Seb will have to start driving for him now.
Yeah, maybe.
No.
But it's interesting. A few years ago, was it 37 points or so, wasn't it, Hamilton was behind anyone in the championship? Raikkonen is now 39 behind Rosberg. And we keep, you know, saying, well, it's not over yet. Anyone can win it. And to be honest, Raikkonen's up there in second already. He's not too far behind. If Ferrari get, you know, their package working better, then it could really work well. You know, they could actually have a championship car, or winning car, I should say.
Could Kimi really do it, or is this what's up with Seb?
I think he's been a bit unlucky, I think. Some various strategy calls and engine problems, but I think Kimi's just having a good season. He seems much happier than he was last year. There's even rumours that they might extend his contract again, which I think... not too sure about if that's the best way to go, but
I hope not. That's one of my predictions that they won't.
But he's he's doing a good job at the moment. You can't, in qualifying, he's closer to Vettel. His race pace seems pretty impressive, so he's just having a good season.
When Lee McKenzie mentioned the stat about him, Max being three when he made his debut, it looked like he was going to smile. I honestly thought Kimi was going to smile. Shall we touch on Toro Rosso briefly? Daniil Kvyat obviously was the other side of the whole Max swap. And all I remembered him for at the weekend was getting annoyed about having to give up two places because he overtook them under the safety car. I mean, oh dear.
There's also quite an interesting bit at the end of the race, as Ricciardo had his puncture, Kvyat, you kind of saw just go sail around the outside and go past, and he was off, and the team were like, oh, has he just put the final nail in his Red Bull coffin? Because they didn't realise at that point Ricciardo had a puncture. But yeah, that was quite an interesting moment. Yeah. But of course,
it tells you a lot about the pressure he's on and the sort of perception of where Daniel is.
It's a horrible weekend for him in a way, because poor boy had to be in the press conference as well and sit next to Verstappen.
Yeah, whose idea was that? With the two of them on the front row, Max and Daniel, to answer all those questions. Like, cheers, guys, thanks.
That's just mean in a way, isn't it?
It was.
But and then he's like qualified, like, raced by Sainz. Verstappen gets in his car and wins the Grand Prix. It was just horrible for him. I felt so sorry for him. And you do worry where his F1 career is going, because he needs to beat Sainz. Because if he doesn't, this could be finished at the age of 22.
And it's such a blow, the situation he's having to deal with. That's the other thing. Williams was the other place I wanted to stop off at, because I know they were looking to improve their strategy tools, and then they sent Felipe Massa out a bit wrong in qualifying, and he ended up being knocked out in Q1, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's not great for them. He done well in the race to come back to eighth for a place you can't overtake. He had a good race, but Williams, I mean, they are sliding backwards, but they're probably in the position where they should be with the budget they've got, and they are a customer team, and you do expect Red Bull and Ferrari and McLaren should be ahead of them. But they're kind of, just sort of drifting backwards at the moment, and that's not good for Massa's career. It's kind of over anyway, isn't it?
Let's just end it now, yeah.
It's kind of just going on, but for Bottas's career, he needs a few good races, really.
Yeah, they didn't do bad at all, really, you know, considering, I mean, Bottas gained a couple of places, got fifth, but I think mainly because two Mercedes which were ahead of him just kind of fell off. But yeah, I mean, Massa 18th up to 8th, that's probably one of the best drives of the season so far. It was a good drive from him.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, well, you are listening to the NRF1 podcast with Acast and with Future Radio. It's time for our goods, badoas and the uglies with our Of The Weekends. Now, I have a feeling we might go through these a bit quicker than normal. Driver of the weekend, anyone? Daniel Kvyat.
Apart from the obvious, I'm going to have to go for Sainz, who was a brilliant weekend because, as we all said, he was quite close to Verstappen. Verstappen wins and he finishes in sixth. And he was very happy as he was draping the Spanish flag around him. I'll go for Sainz, Sainz Jr.
Yes, that's a good shout. Obviously, Verstappen, he won the race, he's 18. You kind of think, got to do that. But just to go for someone different who isn't the race winner, I think Sainz did have a good weekend. And yeah, he was up to third or fourth, wasn't it, at the end of the first lap, I think? Yeah. He had a great start, but he just, unfortunately, I don't think he had the car underneath him to keep the Ferraris behind.
So, you both said Carlos Sainz, but it was effectively Max Verstappen. Brilliant. Don't want to forget that head around. Team of the weekend, Mercedes, anyone?
I think it's got to be
Red Bull.
Yeah, it's got to be Red Bull.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Should we just say Red Bull indeed? Don't think there's any arguments for that. Rich?
Yeah, Red Bull. Also, kind of a worthy shout to McLaren because they had both cars running in the top 10. They're looking quite good actually for a change. Unfortunately, until Alonso's car just broke.
That's never happened before. Okay, how about our pastor or goat of the weekend? My one was going to be the fire marshals, who once again just didn't seem able to put out Nico Hülkenberg's fire as his Force India kind of gave way and Nico had to take over and put it out himself. Classic.
That's a good point. Yeah, I think the Ferrari strategy guy for Vettel, because...
And the Red Bull one then as well, yeah. For Ricciardo.
Because they... More the Ferrari one, because... obviously they decided Kimi to stay on a two-stop and they knew Verstappen was staying on a two-stop, who pitted, and then they decided to pit two laps afterwards. So surely the benefit, they knew they were behind him on track, so the benefit that they'd have to have is fresh tyres towards the end. But then when you pit two laps afterwards, then you're not going to have fresher tyres and you're 8 seconds behind him. It just didn't make go longer and then put set softs on and see if you can overtake. Just made no sense whatsoever.
Love that. Rich?
Yeah, I kind of agree with the Ferrari side of things as well, because of course I had some really good pace in practice and in going into qualifying in the race it just seemed to go. I don't know if they tried to do a setup change or whether it was just the track conditions had changed or what, but they probably were, you would have said, without Mercedes they should have been the best of the rest to win the race, but they didn't really quite have it.
There you go, you've both been very generous to Daniel Kvyat there.
He did get fastest lap, to be fair, for Kvyat.
Did he really take fastest lap? Oh, well, we maybe have been a little bit harsh on him. Fastest lap.
And 1 point he took as well. He finished 10th.
Hey, see? Wasn't it a complete disaster then? Ish. Highlight of, the scenes at the end. The one thing we haven't mentioned, which I think is worth mentioning, Max Verstappen's overtake on Vettel at the start, because that sort of just got him ahead of the Ferrari, didn't it? And it was a wonderful overtake around the outside as well, much like Nico's was on Lewis. But anyone else? Any other highlights? Or should we just go for just the wonder of a great race?
Yeah, it's a great race. And obviously the Mercedes collision. Also, I'm a Hamilton fan and obviously gutted at the start, but it's brilliant for F1. Just all the stuff that happens afterwards. That's what we talk about. We'll talk about it throughout the year probably.
Yeah, it will keep coming up. Rich?
I think probably for the highlight, Ricciardo's attempted overtake on Vettel, where he kind of is like, right, I'm going for it. He kind of threw it up the inside. I remember just sitting there going, oh, crash. And my parents won't appreciate this, but they were both watching the race with their eyes closed at the time, because it was a sunny afternoon, of course. And they kind of suddenly startled and woke up as I shouted, oh, crash, thinking that was going to all end in tears for them both. But that's my highlight.
It was a cracking moment as well. Brilliant stuff. All right then, well, I think we should wrap this up, shouldn't we? Time for some plugs. Don't forget to head along to the website nrf1.uk for our latest blogs, tips, betting tips. Hopefully we'll be back for Monaco. Yeah, Carl's giving me the nod. And more. There's videos, there's new logos on the way, hopefully, possibly. Once, I get a moment. And you can get in touch with us. We love hearing from you. We're going to be back again after Monday with our look ahead to the Monaco Grand Prix, and we've got our tweets and social section. So what we want is any questions, comments, just you want to put your viewpoint across, you want anything to, for the panel to discuss on Monday evening, then just get in contact with us. You can do so on Twitter. The handle is at the NRF1, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/NRF1podcast. If you feel like just dropping us an email, you can do that too, nrf1podcast@gmail.com. And we will be back, as I said, with our Monaco preview. I love Monaco. It'll be a very interesting race as well, off the back of what's just happened in Barcelona. I will have an update on the Prediction League, all being well, because I've got no idea where we are with that. So we'll get that all tied in. I know you guys keep putting your predictions in. Don't worry, they're all recorded. And we'll talk about where F1 is with all the latest F1 news. Of course, they've had a testing session following on from Barcelona too. So loads to talk about again next week, looking ahead to what will happen in Monte Carlo. But until then, Kyle, Rich, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Thank you everyone out there for listening. As always, we really appreciate it. We look forward to hearing from you too, and we will be back to look ahead to the joys of Monte Carlo. If Spain is anything to go by, it is going to be carnage. Bye for now.